Our guest this week is a bit of an expert on how to get farms humming with all sorts of life. Dr. Sarah Cross is a senior lecturer in terrestrial ecology at Canterbury University. While she grew up in the wilds of New York City, her research has focused on getting out in the field to find out how people and wildlife interact on farm.
I started noticing just how many hedgerows were being planted by farmers here. They are popping up everywhere. And it's really, really exciting because this is, I think, a truly grassroots effort by farmers to increase the biodiversity value of their properties while continuing to do really productive farming in those landscapes.
Now, you call them hedgerows, but you're talking also about riparian planting and those sort of strips of planting that we often see along roadsides?
I use hedgerows as a catch-all phrase for really talking about any plantings or habitat that is retained in the spaces between fields. So that can be riparian corridors or plantings. That can be what are called shelter belts often. We in the ecology world call them field margin habitats or non-crop plantings, linear plantings, all of these smaller scale, often straight lines of habitat that are planted in between the growing areas on farms.
Yes, you wouldn't think just a straight line of planting would do much good, but what sort of potential does it have to increase biodiversity?
If we look at studies from places like California and Europe, hedgerows and these linear plantings can play an enormous role in sustaining large diversity of particularly common species, but also increasingly we're finding less common species and rare species using those habitats either to make their way from one conservation area to another or as stopovers during migrations. And we're only just, I think, scratching the surface of the role that these habitats can play.
We love our birds here in New Zealand, but certain types can be a pest, and farmers and growers have to spend a lot of time protecting their crops. What are the advantages of having them on farm, and how can farmers and orchardists and winemakers live side by side with them?
That's exactly what we study in my lab group. So we try to understand what are called the net effects of birds. Many birds actually provide services to farmers. Often the most common one is eating pest insects, but we also have birds that can act as pollinators for some of our crops, particularly here in New Zealand. So they provide actual economic benefits, and that's often kind of earlier in the year in the spring. And then farmers do often have the challenge if they're growing something particularly delicious, like fruit or seeds, that there are many birds that like to enjoy those same crops. And so there are tools that they can use to manage for those species. I think when it comes to hedgerows, one thing that we're seeking to understand is whether or not the hedgerow itself is a major driver of bird losses, of losses from birds to the crop, and how the type of hedgerow that's planted might play a role there. So we're interested in understanding whether or not the exotic hedgerows that are planted, often the very large shelter belts, are actually maintaining larger populations of the introduced birds that are often the main pests of our crops here in New Zealand. Whereas the native hedgerows are more likely to provide habitat for our native species, many of which are actually insectivores or insect-eating species year-round. So they're more likely to be providing those benefits and not as many of those costs to farmers. And so having habitat for those birds, not only at that time of the year for their nesting habitat, but also throughout other times of the year to sustain those populations, is one of the key things that farmers can do. There are other tools that may be useful down the track. In North America, we encourage farmers to install nest boxes for insectivorous birds. A lot of cavity nesting species are insectivores in North America. And we do have some cavity nesting species here that could benefit from that. But at the moment, many of the birds that would probably utilize those nest boxes are introduced species that could then in turn provide or cause damage to the crops. So we still have a lot to disentangle, I think, in the New Zealand system to understand how best to manage it, to really reap those biodiversity rewards, hear that birdsong in our farming landscapes, and then for farmers to get the most benefit and the least cost out of those birds.
Now, you've also looked at how birds of prey can be encouraged into vineyards and ranch lands in the US to act as pest control. Is it being taken up by farmers?
Absolutely. So our work with the Karayaria, the New Zealand falcon, was very popular. And I was one of the founding members of the Karayaria Falcon Trust in Marlborough. And we had many, many requests from growers for releasing falcons into those vineyards around there. And then in California and throughout North America, growers are very keen on utilizing practices that will increase the abundance and diversity of birds of prey on their properties. Mostly what they're doing is putting up barn owl boxes, which are nesting boxes for the native barn owl species there. And barn owls, at least in California, we found that 99% of their diet are animals that are considered pest species by farmers. So they breed quickly. They're called a cosmopolitan species because they're kind of willing to live near people and near each other. So you can have large abundances of the barn owls. And then they eat whatever is most abundant. And in these farm fields, those are things like gophers and voles, which farmers here should be very happy. They don't have to deal with those rodent pest species.
Indeed. But kiwi fruit growers might also be keen to hear about some of the work you're doing into bird damage around bud break time. What have you found so far in that research?
We had a master's student named Jordan Hollinshead who just finished her work, actually, and she was working with Zespri and with growers on the North Island to understand what management factors influenced bird damage to the buds of kiwi fruit. So very, very early in the spring or late winter, birds are often food limited, and they will sometimes turn to the new growth from plants as a kind of last resort food source when there's not other naturally abundant foods in the surrounding areas. So growers knew that birds were causing damage, and they had seen that there was potentially more damage occurring in some orchards over others. And what we found, what Jordan found, is that in orchards that hadn't mowed their grass leading up to that bud burst time, there was actually less damage from birds, even though there were more birds present in those orchards, because most likely that grass had seed on it, and that was providing that important late winter food source for the birds that then weren't attacking those buds.
So that's really interesting, isn't it? That could really help with increasing crop size and so on. But just heading off farm for a moment, you've also done research into birds colliding into buildings in New York City. It's not really a problem we have here, or maybe we do, I don't know. But did anything come out of that research?
We've just published that research recently, and we're looking at how weather impacts bird collision rates with buildings in New York City. New York lies along the Atlantic Flyway, so it's a major migratory pathway for birds, and thousands of birds die in New York every migration season because they collide with glass. Our results are helping to inform when buildings should try to turn their lights off, because we know that having lit buildings, especially large glass skyscrapers at night, is a major contributor to the number of birds that will collide with those buildings. And so understanding the wind conditions and the weather conditions that also lead to higher rates of collisions means that we can fine-tune predictions a bit better so that we can really work with building operators to try to reduce that light pollution on the most dangerous nights for birds.
What a great result that would be.
I should say, we don't know if New Zealand is escaping this, and I actually suspect that we do have pretty high rates of bird collisions here in New Zealand. And especially as we see the resurgence of native birds in our cities, we probably are going to see more and more bird collisions being an issue. We do know that that has been a problem in Wellington for kereru that are returning to the city in large numbers. And there is a group who are a charitable organization who have been working with some of the Wellington City Council to try to implement bird-friendly glass on some of the more dangerous buildings there. And I do suspect we need to start thinking about that a lot more here in New Zealand.
I was talking there to Dr. Sarah Cross. She says, of course, the use of birds as a friend and not a foe in farming systems is not a new field. Before the pesticide era, they were a common tool in the quest to grow food. Her research team starting to map hedgerows on the Canterbury Plains so they can better understand the effects on birds and farming systems.